This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. My co-host Tim Henney is out today.
Well, hey, whatever happened to kindness? My next guest, Dr. Tara Cousineau, asked that very question.
You know, common decency, empathy, and respect are dwindling resources, it seems, but she calls out for us to realize that really those things are for our own good and everyone else's, to practice kindness. Because like many things that age-old wisdom has been telling us for millennia, science can actually prove. As it turns out, she says kindness is a happiness fix.
Dr. Cousineau joins me by phone. Welcome to The Mountain Life.
Hi, happy to be here.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. I think you, like a lot of folks, are worried that civility has gone by the wayside recently, and I don't know what your take on it is, and I'm about to ask that, but I'm wondering if you think it has something to do with the pendulum swinging somehow. Did we think we became too civil or something, and now it's going the other way?
Well, you know, I do think life works in those ways where we have these phases, right? I mean, we have cultural shifts, we have phases, we have major events that happen in the world that can just really shift our attention to the negative. And I think that a lot of our attention right now is being shifted to the negative and a lot of suffering in the world. And so I think that's partly the contribution to this sense that kindness has gone out the window.
So you're a clinical psychologist. You also are a social entrepreneur. And obviously, it's age-old wisdom. And it is funny how now, especially neuroscience, can show us that science proves these things that we've been talking about. You know, kindness is good for you. But what is it that drew you to it?
Well, for me, you know, these sorts of projects always start with some sort of, you know, personal incident, and which actually I experienced with my my older daughter on the brink of senior year high school was beaten up by another girl, someone who I knew. And it was an ugly incident. It was unnecessary. It was certainly unkind. And I just kind of sat back and said, what happened to kindness? Because partly it was part of the cultural milieu where it's cool to be cruel, right? And so I just did what I tend to do when I freak out or the, you know, tiger mother comes out, is I kind of just went to the science and I said, what do we know now about kindness that maybe we don't know at all or we sort of aren't interested in? I don't know. So I just kind of put on my thinking cap and I said, I want to know what's out there because we know intuitively that it's important. We all desire kindness, but we also kind of just dismiss it. And there also seems to be somewhat of a phobia around kindness. We don't trust it anymore. So I think that's when I really just said, I got to look into this a little bit deeper. Is there anything new here?
So I think it's a very small percentage of people who actually have no empathy, and those would be psychopaths and very few other people. But we are hardwired for empathy. And so what you're saying is we ought to really bring that out and nourish it and strengthen it in ourselves because it's really only going to make us happier. But what about those people who don't have empathy?
Right. Well, you know, I do have hope because we do have the blueprint, if you will, for empathy. I mean, there are people who really didn't get some very early nurturing, very good role models. Their life has been sort of strewn with stress, and so they're in constant survival mode, and they've really adapted to, you know, their brains have adapted to fear, right? Mm-hmm. Fear, anger, survival. Those situations can be remedied, but it takes time. So, you know, I think of empathy as an inner resource, and it's something, it's kind of like baker's yeast in leavening, you know, for bread. You know, it's like it actually takes time to grow, and it needs repeated experiences of safety, confidence, skill building, right? It doesn't come out of nowhere. People don't have empathy or don't have empathy. It's really on a continuum. And so one of the things that I always say is like, you know, all those kindness campaigns, they sort of stop at third grade. We have to keep repeating the practice of kindness throughout our lives. You know, even in high school and in the workplaces, right, in our communities. But we tend to think, oh, kindness is cute and sweet and that's nice for little kids. Well, in fact, no. We need to continue to lay down the neural networks, if you will, to cultivate compassion. It's simple in some ways, but it takes effort. And that's really one of the theses of, you know, in my book.
So laying down the neural network, I really like that. And in doing so, you break your book into four parts. To be human is to be kind, your caring mind, kindfulness, and kind sight. So we've talked a little bit about, you know, being hardwired to be kind. And talk, if you would, about, you know, what's kindfulness?
Yeah, well, so I'm really trying to elevate kindness back up to a really important personal virtue and a civic virtue. So I was trying to develop some language. And you may be familiar with the mindfulness movement, right? I mean, there's a lot of talk about mindfulness. There's a lot of research now that's backing the practice of mindfulness. And kindfulness is just really a nuanced way of looking at it. It's really being aware of the present moment with heart. So a lot of the practices of mindfulness are focused, right? It's mental training for attention. But when we put the heart into it, when we can learn to be, you know, really present in the moment without judgment, with a sensibility of caring and warmth, it really can change our interactions. So one of the things that I do, I mean, I've got teenage girls, I have lots of clients, you know, it seems like the world has run amok. And so continually during the day, I just practice this one little phrase, which is, how can I bring kindfulness to this moment? And it's really about taking that pause, zooming out, taking a step back and saying, okay, how can I approach this from a place of generosity? Or looking at this interaction that the person in front of me or the situation in front of me, well, you know, they're probably doing the best they can in the moment with the skills that they have. So it's really about cultivating orientation to life that comes really from a place of an open heart and a generous heart.
That's really nice. And, you know, that sort of thing may stop you from, I'm thinking if you apply that concept to when you're tempted to do that idle chatter, which is gossip, which, you know, we all sort of fall prey to from time to time. And I wonder if it's that we just don't know what else to talk about. But if while you're having that conversation, you're about to engage in that, in gossip, if you just think about what the kind approach is to, and applying empathy to it instead of maliciousness.
Right. It's really about, it serves as reorient yourself, and it is about slowing down, as you mentioned. Yeah. I mean, we are sort of hijacked in the moment all the time, and we're addicted to busyness, really. I feel like that, you know, in my book, I talk about stress as sort of this sort of slow drip poison that really interferes in how we interact in the world and how we treat ourselves even, which actually brings me to that next term, kindsight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, part of being kind in the world, and we all think that we're kind, and I always say, try to be a little kinder than you actually are, because you really have to kind of go that extra step. But kindsight is really looking at your experiences, especially your past experiences, with tenderness and understanding. A lot of people walk around in the world with a lot of shame, blame, a really loud inner critic. And when I think about the girl who beat up my daughter, Sophie, you know, she came from a place where she didn't really have the skills to manage a lot of anger, you know, that was happening perhaps in her family, and a lot of grief and loss. And so when we learn to actually apply kindfulness and kindheartedness to ourselves, when we learn to take care of, you know, maybe the smaller parts of ourselves that aren't really healed yet, and treat ourselves with kindness, that actually really paves the way to approach the world in a much more open-hearted way and, you know, ability to bridge differences.
I think we all have our little story that we tell ourselves that help us to, instead of blame other people, maybe just show some compassion towards them. And my personal story is once I was at the children's hospital pulling in there for an appointment with my son, and someone had, the parking lot was full, except there was this one car that had straddled the line and taken up two spots. And so my normal response would have been, you know, like, oh, what a bozo taking, you know, doesn't know how to park. But I thought for a second and I thought, you know, maybe this is a mom whose child is living in this hospital and was very stressed upon coming here. And maybe her child is undergoing chemo or any number of other things. And she pulled in here and she just wasn't thinking and she straddled the line. And so I've really tried to take that little story, that's my little story, for applying kindness. I'm sure you've developed a million of those stories.
Yeah, it's so funny because my younger daughter actually will say that when someone's speeding by and I'll get really angry. And she's like, well, maybe he's bringing his wife, you know, she's having a baby and she's yes. need to rush to the emergency room. And I'm like, that's very kind of you. You know, like, so yes, and it's sort of a practice, right? And it really does alleviate sort of that immediate stress trigger that we get, right? So.
Yeah, absolutely. This kind of leads me into something I wanted to ask you about, and it has to do with this seeming revolt against being politically correct. And back in the beginning of our interview, I asked you something about the pendulum. And I have a couple of people very close to me in my life who have said things to this, you know, this degree. I'm so sick of political correctness, and I'm going to go around and say Merry Christmas to everyone because, you know, dang it, that's what I celebrate. And I find it really off-putting and really sad and really, I mean, I get it, but how about, could you just maybe address that particular point?
You know, I think that a lot of us, and I include myself in this, are just really unskilled, actually, in engaged dialogue. We're not sort of taught it growing up. We're not really taught how to take other people's perspective in a really consistent way. And part of it is that we aren't actually in touch with our own sort of needs or emotions in the moment. You know, there's a whole area called nonviolent communication, and it's actually the skills are very simple, and it's really learning how to have that engaged dialogue where it's not this polarization, right? It's not black and white, you or me. And that actually takes some practice. So the person who's saying, well, I'm just going to go and say, you know, Merry Christmas, you know, it's just like, well, what's going on underneath that? You know, what's my need here? Is the need that you need to be understood and respected for your own beliefs? Okay, well, then how might you go about this in a different way? And is there a more generous way to go about it? I don't think that people necessarily step back. We just get into sort of our defensive positions, our default mode. And so it does take this kind of practice to just actually think about where you're coming from in the first place. It's hard right now, I think, and we need more training, really, in compassionate dialogue. It does, I think, need to. It would be really great to actually have classes in high school that continue through college, and then we're practicing the workplaces, because, you know, young adults and adults are the ones that are really kind of forging the way, and there's a real opportunity to learn how to have these kinds of conversations. We're just not having them.
That's great. If you're just joining us, my guest is Dr. Tara Cozzano. I'm sorry, give me your pronunciation of your last name.
Oh, sure. It's Tara Cozzano, and don't worry about it. I live in Boston. Everyone matches up my name.
Okay. There we go. Well, Tara has written a book called The Kindness Cure, How the Science of Compassion Can Heal Your Heart and Your World. And, you know, that little reminder that you just gave me is so wonderful, because really it's not about what someone says to us. It's ultimately about how we handle it and how we receive it and then how we respond to it. So, you know, sort of getting to the deeper level of why someone may be not so civil, not so kind, is where we really need to go, because a lot of us just get angry back at it, you know?
Correct. Well, you know, I always say it's like, you know, the one of the best skills that anybody can have is learning emotional regulation, right? It's just is really being, this is where the kindfulness and the mindfulness comes in. It's just really understanding your own reactions to the world, because when you do, you can actually start to respond to the world in a different way, in a more mindful way, in a more courteous way. And so I spent a lot of time on managing stress in the book because, again, we're not really trained very well. And understanding actually how the mind works can be so helpful, because when people are triggered, you can't help it, right? It is a first automatic response to something environment. So it's often called the first arrow. Like you're hit with that first arrow and you shout out or you lash out or you hide, whatever your reaction is. But we tend to give ourselves a second arrow and a third arrow. We apply unnecessary suffering to those experiences because I start going into the story. The storyline might be, oh, you know, there's something wrong with me, or that person is always that way, right? We just engage our storylines, and they're often really negative. And so, you know, our brains have this sort of quirky habit called the negativity bias, where our attention just goes to the danger right away or the threat right away. And we have to learn to pull back from that and understand that that's just what happened, so that we can redirect our response to the world in just a much more measured way, if you will. And that does take effort and skill over time.
Yeah, that's really great. You know, I just have to ask you to tell the story about Jonah and Dylan. I started reading that story, and it just kind of made me break down in a big sob reading it. It's a wonderful story.
It's a wonderful story. I actually heard it on, I heard it on a lovely radio show on NPR called Kind World. So you can look it up there and actually hear the boys speak. But I actually talked to the dad of Dylan. And the story is basically that these two kids, they're first graders, and Dylan learns that his friend, Jonah, has this genetic disorder that his liver doesn't function very well. And the six-year-old mind in Dylan was just like, well, we have to get him help. How are we going to do this? I want to help him. And so this little kid decides that he's going to do a fundraiser at the next PTA meeting. And so he enlists his parents. They get the Whole Foods to donate chocolate bars. He does this little coloring book, and he sells it for like $5 or $10. He raised $5,000 in a matter of an afternoon. And then he was so empowered, and he thought, well, if I can do this, I can do more. I want to raise $1 million. And his mom thought he was nuts. Well, this little kid has got, you know, the hearts of everybody involved. And he started speaking. He got picked up by the local news. So he and the Dylan's family and Jonah's family started getting together to kind of just raise awareness about this illness and raise money. Wouldn't you know it? In a matter of a year or two, this kid instigated a raise of like $1 million for scientific research.
Wow. That's such a great story.
Yeah, it's so extraordinary because he didn't have the fear of failure. He didn't know any better. He just kind of had this idea and had a big heart and got people on board. And so it's just really a lovely story. And it just comes to show you, you know, that lots of things can be done when you just put your heart in it.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Tara, thank you so much for joining me on The Mountain Life. The book is The Kindness Cure: How the Science of Compassion Can Heal Your Heart and Your World. It's a very nice concept and a wonderful book.
Thanks for having me.